A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
This week we got something from Hannah. She listened to that Barney episode, and it apparently hit closer to home than any of us expected. She grew up on hundreds of hours of Barney, and she's noticed that as an adult, whenever she's in a tense situation with strangers, like negotiating something at a bank, she starts smiling and laughing. And only now has she connected the dots and wonders whether she's essentially giggling like Barney as a conditioned response. The question is that actually what's happening? And how do you undo that kind of deep childhood conditioning?
This is genuinely one of the most fascinating things anyone has sent us, because what she's describing isn't just a quirk. It's a specific, observable behavioral pattern that maps almost perfectly onto what we know about how children's media encodes social scripts.
The Barney giggle as social bridge. She's essentially asking whether she's been running Barney.exe in her brain for 20 plus years without realizing it.
And the answer is almost certainly yes, but not in the simple cause and effect way that phrase suggests. Let me unpack this. Barney's giggle is not a random sound effect. It's a carefully engineered social signal. The show's creators, Cheryl Leach, Kathy Parker, Dennis DeShazer, they didn't just throw in a giggle because dinosaurs are funny. They built the entire emotional architecture of the show around that laugh as a transition mechanism.
Transition between what and what?
Between negative affect and positive affect. If you watch enough episodes, and I mean really watch them structurally, the giggle almost always appears at the precise moment a child character expresses uncertainty, fear, or mild distress. A kid says, "I'm scared of the dark," or "I don't know how to share." Barney doesn't first explain why the dark isn't scary. Then he sings, "The giggle is the bridge."
The giggle functions as a kind of emotional reset button. It says, "We're going to acknowledge this uncomfortable thing, but immediately reframe it as non-threatening."
More than that, it models a specific response to discomfort. The giggle says, when you feel tension, you can replace it with warmth and absurdity. And the replacement isn't intellectual, it's physiological. You're literally training a child's nervous system to respond to social friction with a particular vocalization and facial expression.
If you've watched hundreds of hours of this, you've essentially undergone what a behavioral psychologist would call massive social scripting. Thousands of repetitions of the sequence. Tension arises, giggle intervenes, tension dissolves, group bonds.
Here's where it gets really interesting. There's actual research on this. A 2002 study in the Journal of Applied Developmental Psychology looked at children's prosocial behavior after watching Barney versus other children's programming. Kids who watched Barney showed significantly higher rates of what they called other-oriented smiling and laughing in mildly stressful peer interactions. They didn't just become nicer, they adopted a specific facial affect strategy.
Wait, so researchers actually documented Barney-induced giggling in real social situations?
They documented an increase in exactly the behavior Hannah is describing. Smiling and laughing as a tension management tool in situations that don't naturally call for it. The effect was strongest in children who watched more than 5 hours a week. Hannah says hundreds of hours total. She's way past the threshold.
The mechanism is basically, Barney installs a social operating system where the default response to interpersonal friction is performative warmth, and the performance isn't fake. It's learned so deeply it feels natural. The person experiencing it feels like they're being friendly, not deflecting.
And the key word there is performative, not in a pejorative sense, but in the sense that it's a learned script, not a spontaneous emotional response. The person isn't actually feeling amusement. The amygdala is registering threat, and the learned motor pattern fires instead of the fight-or-flight response.
It's the emotional equivalent of muscle memory. You don't think about walking. Hannah doesn't think about giggling at the bank manager. Her body just does it because the neural pathway was laid down at age 4 and has been reinforced every time it successfully diffused a tense moment since.
there's a concept from Paul Ekman's work on facial feedback that's relevant here. Ekman found that deliberately producing a facial expression can actually generate the corresponding emotion. If you force a smile, you start to feel slightly happier. The corollary is that if you've been trained to produce a smile-laugh response to tension, you may actually be short-circuiting your ability to fully experience and process the tension itself.
Which means Hannah might not just be deflecting awkwardness externally. She might be preventing herself from feeling the full weight of situations where feeling that weight would actually be useful.
That's the deeper problem. The giggle isn't just a social lubricant. It's a form of emotional avoidance that's become so automatic she didn't notice it for decades. She literally described it as something she only connected to Barney yesterday. That's how transparent these scripts become. They don't feel like scripts. They feel like personality.
It reminds me of that thing where people who grew up in households with a lot of conflict become hyper-attuned to emotional shifts and develop peacemaking behaviors they don't even recognize as coping mechanisms. Except instead of a volatile parent, the training environment was a purple dinosaur who loved them very much.
That's the insidious part. The training environment was benevolent. Barney wasn't manipulating children in any malicious sense. The show was trying to teach pro-social behavior. But the method, masked repetition of a specific emotional sequence, is essentially a form of conditioning that doesn't discriminate between healthy and unhealthy applications.
How does conditioning differ from, say, normal social learning? Every kid picks up mannerisms from their environment.
The difference is dosage and specificity. Most children's media presents a variety of emotional responses to tension. Rogers modeled calm curiosity. Sesame Street characters argue and reconcile in different ways. But Barney had one primary tool, the giggle-to-song pipeline, and it was deployed with almost metronomic consistency across hundreds of episodes.
The giggle is the glockenspiel of emotional bypass.
It's a single note played over and over until the brain can't hear anything else in that frequency range.
What's actually happening neurologically when this conditioned response fires? If Hannah's sitting across from a bank manager who's being unlikable, what's the sequence?
I can walk through it. The brain's salience network, primarily the anterior insula and dorsal anterior cingulate, detects a mismatch between expected social smoothness and actual friction. In a non-conditioned person, that triggers a pause, some cognitive appraisal, maybe a slight increase in cortisol. In Hannah, the detection of friction immediately activates a well-rehearsed motor program stored in the supplementary motor area and cerebellum. The smile muscles contract, the vocal cords produce laugh-like sounds, and the whole sequence executes before the prefrontal cortex has even finished its appraisal.
The laugh isn't a response to a thought. It's a pre-thought response.
It's a response that bypasses the thinking parts entirely, and that's why it feels involuntary to her. It essentially is.
The bank manager sees this and probably thinks she's either nervous or strange or both, which adds another layer of tension, which probably triggers more giggling.
A positive feedback loop of awkwardness. The conditioning creates the very situation it's trying to resolve.
This is like adopting a feral cat that turns out to be a skunk.
I want to pull on a thread here that I think is underappreciated. Barney's giggle isn't just any laugh, it's a very specific acoustic profile. It's low-pitched for a children's character, rhythmically predictable, and it always comes in bursts of exactly two or three iterations. Almost always three.
You've analyzed the giggle.
Of course I have. The three-beat giggle is interesting because triplets in Western music carry a specific affective quality. They're playful, they're lilting, they feel incomplete in a way that invites resolution. A two-beat laugh feels final. A four-beat laugh feels performative. The three-beat giggle feels like an invitation. It's the musical equivalent of an open hand.
Covering the covers.
And if you're exposed to that three-beat invitation thousands of times in context, where it reliably precedes social harmony, your brain learns that producing something acoustically similar will produce similar results. Even if the context is completely different. Even if you're not a purple dinosaur. Even if you're a grown woman in a bank.
The question of how to undo this is actually more complicated than just stop laughing. Because you're not dealing with a habit. You're dealing with a deeply encoded social script that has its own neurological infrastructure.
This is where I want to be careful. I'm not a practicing clinician anymore, and what I'm about to describe is based on the research literature, not clinical experience. But there are well-established approaches to modifying conditioned emotional responses, and they all share a common first step, which Hannah has already achieved. She connected the dots. That's the hardest part. Most people with deeply conditioned social scripts never identify them as scripts at all. They just think, that's how I am. The fact that she can observe the behavior and trace it to a source is huge.
Step one is done. What's step two?
Step two is what behavioral therapists call stimulus discrimination training. The conditioned response fires in situations of tension with unfamiliar people, but not all such situations are the same. A tense contract negotiation at a bank is different from a tense moment. At a dinner party is different from a tense exchange with a customer service representative. The goal is to teach the brain to discriminate between situations where the giggle response might actually be socially useful and situations where it's counterproductive.
Is it ever socially useful for an adult to giggle like Barney?
Honestly, in a narrow set of circumstances, yes. If you're dealing with children, or in a very casual social setting where warmth and absurdity are the right tools, a version of that response can work. The problem isn't the response itself. It's the indiscriminate application.
You're not trying to delete the Barney script entirely. You're trying to add an if-then condition.
If context equals professional negotiation, then do not giggle. If context equals playing with nieces and nephews, then giggle away.
How do you actually install those if-then conditions in a brain that's been running the same program for 25 years?
The most effective approach is probably something called habit reversal training, combined with mindfulness of the specific physical sensations that precede the giggle. Before the laugh fires, there's almost certainly a physical precursor, a tightness in the chest, a flutter in the stomach, a slight change in breathing. If Hannah can learn to detect that precursor, she can insert a pause.
A pause where she can choose.
A pause where the prefrontal cortex gets a vote. Even half a second is enough. The conditioned response is fast, but it's not instantaneous. There's a window. The trick is learning to feel it opening.
That sounds like meditation with extra steps.
It essentially is. Mindfulness-based interventions have a strong evidence base for exactly this kind of automatic behavior modification. A 2019 meta-analysis in Clinical Psychology Review found that mindfulness training significantly reduced automatic emotional reactivity across a range of contexts. The mechanism appears to be exactly what we're describing, increased interoceptive awareness that creates a gap between stimulus and response.
The prescription is basically, notice the tension in your body before you laugh, take a breath, and choose a different response.
It sounds simple. It's incredibly hard in practice, because you're doing it in real time in social situations that already have cognitive load. You're essentially asking your brain to run a new program while the old program is still trying to autoplay.
What about replacement behaviors? If she's not going to giggle, what should she do instead?
This is crucial, and it's where a lot of behavior modification fails. You can't just remove a response. You have to replace it. The nervous system needs somewhere to go. Silence isn't a response. It's just a vacuum that the old behavior will rush to fill.
What's the replacement?
The research on this points towards something counterintuitive. The most effective replacement for attention-diffusing behavior is often attention-acknowledging behavior, not diffusing the tension, but naming it. Something as simple as, I'm noticing this feels a bit tense, or let me think about that for a moment. It doesn't have to be confrontational, it just has to be honest.
Instead of laughing to make the tension go away, you just sit in it and maybe even point at it.
Here's the thing. Research on negotiation and difficult conversations consistently shows that acknowledging tension actually reduces it more effectively than trying to smooth it over. A 2014 study in the Journal of Experimental Social Psychology found that explicitly naming an awkward dynamic in a negotiation led to better outcomes and lower stress for both parties than attempting to maintain surface-level pleasantness.
The Barney giggle might actually be making negotiations worse, not better. The bank manager feels the tension, sees Hannah laughing for no apparent reason, and gets even more uncomfortable.
The giggle is a mismatched signal in a professional context. It codes as nervousness or insincerity, neither of which helps you negotiate a contract.
It's fascinating that a pro-social behavior trained in childhood becomes an anti-social behavior in adulthood simply because the context changed, but the script didn't update.
This is a broader phenomenon worth naming. A lot of adult social dysfunction is just childhood adaptation that outlived its context. The people pleaser who learned at age 6 that agreeableness kept the peace. The conflict avoider who learned that silence was safer than opinion. The over-explainer who learned that thoroughness prevented punishment. These aren't personality traits. They're survival strategies running on expired licenses.
The Barney Giggle is a survival strategy for a threat that doesn't exist anymore. The threat of not being loved by the big purple dinosaur and his multicultural cohort of singing children.
The tragedy is that the strategy worked. It probably worked beautifully in childhood. It made social situations easier. It made her more likable. It smoothed over moments of friction with peers and adults. The conditioning was reinforced because it was effective in the environment where it was learned.
Until it wasn't.
Until the environment changed and the script didn't. Which brings us to the deeper question Hannah is really asking. Not just, how do I stop giggling, but how do I learn to sit with uncomfortable social interactions?
That's the existential layer. The giggle is a symptom. The underlying issue is a low tolerance for social discomfort.
That's not a personal failing. It's a skill that was never taught because Barney taught the opposite. Barney taught that discomfort should be immediately transformed into warmth and song. The entire emotional pedagogy of the show is built on the premise that negative feelings are problems to be solved, not experiences to be inhabited.
Which is actually a pretty profound philosophical stance when you think about it. Barney presents a world where sadness, fear, and anger are transient states that can and should be quickly converted to joy through community and imagination. That's not nothing. It's a whole emotional cosmology.
It's essentially a form of emotional eschatology. The negative emotion is temporary. The positive emotion is the promised end state, and the giggle is the ritual that enacts the transition.
Hannah grew up in a theological system where the giggle is a sacrament.
I mean, when you put it that way, deprogramming from a religious upbringing and deprogramming from Barney conditioning might involve similar psychological processes. You're not just changing a behavior. You're restructuring a worldview about what emotions are for and what should be done with them.
Which is why, just stop laughing is terrible advice. You're asking someone to violate a deeply held, if unconscious, belief about how social reality works.
The belief being, tension is dangerous and must be immediately neutralized.
Versus the adult belief, tension is information and can be tolerated.
And learning that second belief isn't intellectual. You can't just read it in a book and adopt it. It has to be learned experientially, through repeated exposure to tense situations where you don't deploy the giggle and the world doesn't end.
Exposure therapy, basically?
Graduated exposure, yes. Start with low-stakes situations where tension is mild and the consequences of awkwardness are negligible. Practice sitting in the discomfort without deflecting. Notice that nothing terrible happens. Build up to higher-stakes situations gradually.
What's a low-stakes tension situation for practice?
Returning something to a store without a receipt. Asking a stranger for directions, and then not having the directions make sense and having to ask again. Telling the server your order is wrong. Small moments of social friction where the giggle would normally fire, but where the stakes are essentially zero.
In each of those moments, the practice is, feel the giggle impulse, don't act on it, and just...
Ideally, have a replacement behavior ready. Not a new script, but a genuine question or statement. Let me think about that. I'm not sure how to respond to that. Can you say more about that? Something that keeps you present in the interaction rather than exiting through laughter.
The laugh is an exit. That's what it is. It's a polite way of leaving the room while your body stays in the chair.
That's a really good way of putting it. It's dissociation light, a micro absence.
The goal is to stay in the room.
The goal is to stay in the room, in your body, in the uncomfortable moment, and discover that you can survive it. That the discomfort has a shape and a duration and an ending, and that none of those things are actually dangerous.
There's something almost Buddhist about this, sitting with discomfort without grasping for relief.
The overlap between modern behavioral therapy and contemplative traditions is not a coincidence. They're both describing the same basic human capacity to observe an impulse without acting on it. Different language, same mechanism.
The Barney deprogramming protocol, if we were to sketch it out, would be something like 1. Recognize the giggle as a conditioned script, not a personality trait. 2. Learn to detect the physical precursors that signal the script is about to fire. 3. Practice inserting a pause. 4. Replace the giggle with a present moment acknowledgement. 5. Start with low-stakes situations and build up.
6. And this is the one nobody talks about. Forgive yourself when you fail. because you will fail. The giggle will fire. You'll be halfway through a hysterical laugh at the mortgage broker before you even realize it's happening. And the worst thing you can do in that moment is add a layer of shame on top of the conditioning.
Because then you're just adding another negative emotion that the giggle will try to neutralize, creating an even tighter loop.
You're laughing because you're uncomfortable, and then you're uncomfortable because you're laughing, and then you're laughing harder. That's a spiral.
The protocol includes self-compassion, which, ironically, Barney also taught, just in a completely unhelpful way for this context.
Barney taught self-compassion as, you're special and loved, which is nice, but it doesn't teach you how to sit with the feeling of having messed up. It teaches you to bypass that feeling toward reassurance.
The Barney model of emotional processing, feel bad, receive hug, sing song, feel good. No step where you actually examine the bad feeling.
To be fair to the show, it was designed for 2 to 5 year olds. Deep emotional examination is developmentally inappropriate for that age group. The problem isn't that Barney did something wrong. The problem is that the coping strategy appropriate for a 4-year-old became the default strategy for a 30-something adult.
It's like if you never upgraded from training wheels and now you're trying to commute on a balance bike.
The tool was age appropriate when issued. It just never got replaced.
I want to circle back to something. Hannah asked whether she's giggling like Barney without even realizing it. And I think the answer is yes, but also no. She's not giggling like Barney. She's giggling like a child who watched Barney and internalized the giggle as the correct response to social tension. The giggle is hers now. It's been hers for decades. Barney just provided the template.
That's an important distinction. The behavior isn't an imitation, it's an incorporation. The script has been so thoroughly internalized that it's no longer recognizable as external in origin. That's why it took her until yesterday to make the connection.
Which raises a question I find unsettling. How many other Barney scripts is she running without knowing it? How many are any of us running?
If you consumed hundreds of hours of any media property between the ages of 2 and 5, the answer is probably more than you want to think about. Early childhood media exposure is a massive, uncontrolled experiment in social scripting, and we're all walking around with the results.
Roger's cohort probably has different scripts. The Sesame Street cohort. The Blue's Clues cohort.
There's actually some research on this. Different children's shows emphasize different social-emotional strategies. Roger's emphasized patience and direct emotional expression. Sesame Street emphasized curiosity and humor as coping. Barney emphasized collective joy and the rapid transformation of negative affect. Each one installs a slightly different operating system.
Hannah got the Barney OS.
With the giggle as the default system sound.
If you're in your 30s and you've just realized you've been running Barney.exe your whole life, is there a way to do a clean install? Or are you stuck dual booting?
You're never doing a clean install. The neural pathways laid down in early childhood are remarkably persistent. What you can do is build new pathways that become dominant through repeated use. The old script never fully disappears. It just gets outcompeted by the new one.
The giggle will always be there, lurking.
It will probably always be the first impulse. But the gap between impulse and action can grow. And in that gap, choice lives.
That's actually a hopeful note. You don't have to exercise Barney. You just have to learn to pause before you let him speak.
Maybe, in some contexts, let him speak on purpose. There's nothing wrong with the giggle itself. It's a warm, pro-social signal. The problem was never the giggle. The problem was the indiscriminate deployment.
If you're at a playground with your kids and something awkward happens, giggling like Barney might be exactly the right move. The context matters.
The goal isn't to kill Barney. The goal is to put Barney in a box and only take him out when he's actually helpful.
Barney in a box is a phrase I never expected to say on this show.
Yet here we are.
To answer Hannah's question directly, yes, the giggling is almost certainly Barney conditioning. No, you're not broken or weird for having it. Yes, it can be changed, but the change process is more like learning a musical instrument than flipping a switch. It takes practice, self-observation, and a willingness to be uncomfortable while your brain builds new pathways.
I'd add, the fact that you noticed it is remarkable. Most people go their whole lives without ever seeing the scripts they're running. You saw it. That's the hard part. The rest is just practice.
One practical thing I'd suggest. Next time you're in a mildly tense situation and you feel the giggle coming, try saying out loud, I'm noticing I feel a bit awkward about this. Just name it. See what happens.
That's actually a great suggestion. Naming the internal state externalizes it and gives the other person something real to respond to, rather than leaving them to interpret unexplained laughter.
If you can't manage that, just take a breath. That's the whole practice. Feel the giggle impulse, take one breath, and then decide.
The breath is the circuit breaker. It interrupts the automatic sequence. One breath is enough to give the prefrontal cortex time to boot up.
If none of that works and you find yourself mid-giggle at the bank, just own it. Say sorry, I have this weird nervous laugh, ignore it. Most people will.
Self-disclosure is a surprisingly effective tension reducer. It's not as elegant as the mindfulness approach, but it works in a pinch.
The Barney laugh, named and claimed.
There are worse legacies from a childhood media property. She could have internalized the I love you, you love me song as a conflict resolution strategy.
Can you imagine, in a contract negotiation, just bursting into song?
I mean, it would certainly change the dynamic.
Not necessarily for the better. Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1970s, a corroded brass mechanism was recovered from a shipwreck in the Drake Passage and initially misidentified as a Renaissance-era navigational calculator. It was reclassified in 1987 as a late Victorian tide predictor built by a Scottish clockmaker who had simply used very old-looking screws.
The vintage screw gambit.
A tide predictor pretending to be a Renaissance artifact. There's a metaphor in there somewhere.
This has been My Weird Prompts. We're at myweirdprompts.com, and we'd love it if you left us a review wherever you listen.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from law. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.